Again, it's the Taylor Report. We have a website, taylor-report.com. Previous programs are available there, and this one will be. We did an interview some months back, not that long ago, with Fred Jerome, an American author. He's done two or three books now on Albert Einstein. He did one on Albert Einstein with and his problems with J. Edgar Hoover and the FBI, quite a brilliant book. And he also did a book about Albert Einstein's role together with Paul Robeson and with W.E.B. Du Bois and others in attempting to bring laws to the United States to end lynching. And by the way, Black Lives Matter would have been probably a good title at that time. And Albert Einstein lent his name and energy, I shouldn't just say just his name, his energy to helping develop a strategy to try to fight to get federal legislation to stop lynching in America. That's detailed in the second book by Fred Jerome. And then there is his book, which is a really fascinating book, called Albert Einstein and on Zionism and Israel. And Fred Jerome has looked into the issue of in an essay recently published, and you're going to hear about it in the interview. But he looked into the question of the founding of the State of Israel, but involving a crime that would be that is the assassination of Count Bernadotte, and it's quite engrossing. We will probably have to cut it short and play the rest of it at another time. But this coming up is an interview done, a second interview done with Fred Jerome. And welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor, and this is Chapter 2 of our conversation with Fred Jerome, who's the author of a wonderful book, Einstein. He's the editor of a wonderful book, Einstein on Israel and Zionism. And Fred Jerome has written an article published in The Link, which you can get at AMEU.org. That's the Americans for Middle East Understanding. And it's a July-August 2015 edition. I really urge you to get that. And the title of the piece is Kill Bernadotte. And we were speaking last week with Fred about the situation that this rather exceptional moment in history that seemed to have such great consequences. Fred, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you.
It's good to be back. by the way, we had many requests. Our listeners were very enthralled, and that's why we really think it's important to continue on because there's so much involved in your article. I wonder if we could just revisit one thing about this gentleman, Folke Bernadotte. I understand he didn't like the term count, so he asked people to call him Folke Bernadotte. At the top of your article, you cited some individuals from Israeli citizens who had been caught up in the network, prison network of the Nazis, probably scheduled to die, and their lives had been saved in 1945 by the intercession of the Red Cross.
Yes.
Okay, talk a little about who they are and how well established the facts are about in that case.
How well established the what? I'm sorry.
I know that Bernadotte, since the UN mediator was killed in September 1948, there's been some talk attempting to kind of reduce his reputation, and I notice that in your article you cite Yad Vashem, the Holocaust institution in Israel. They have figures of people, numbers of people saved and attributed to Count Bernadotte. But you also cited a couple of individuals who themselves were living evidence. If you could talk about that.
Yeah, and I'll go back to that in a minute, but I should mention that the man who was sitting next to Bernadotte at the time he was killed by the Israeli, the Stern Gang terrorists, if I can use that term, was also had asked to sit next to him because his wife had also been one of the people saved by the White Bus Project, White Bus Rescue Mission that Bernadotte had organized in 1945. Mm-hmm. And so there are many, many people who remember that vividly. The people that you're asking about was Miriam Akavia, A-K-A, V as in Victor, I-A, mm-hmm. who was a Polish-born Israeli writer, and her husband, whose name was Hanan, H-A-N-A-N. Mm-hmm. And at the time that I was referring to, when they were 81 years old, they lived in Israel. They went by bus to Jerusalem, and they were to attend a memorial service in honor of Count Bernadotte, Volker Bernadotte. And the reason they went from at the age of 81 from Tel Aviv, where they lived, to Jerusalem to honor Bernadotte was because they had both been in the concentration camp when Bernadotte's project, his white buses, came to pick up, to free people or get people who were released early as part of the deal that Bernadotte had made with the Nazis. And the reason they Nazis agreed to that, I go into in my article also, if you want to discuss it. But in any case, there's no question that there were thousands of Jews among the people who were released. This couple that I referred to, Miriam and Hanan Akavia, were two of the many people. Mm-hmm. And felt they owed their lives to Bernadotte. Mm-hmm. When the Israeli Stern Gang and other Israelis decided they didn't like Bernadotte because they didn't like his proposals of how the country should be divided and the other proposals that I discussed last week, and I can come back to that, they accused him of they accused him of having arranged for the release of prisoners, but not Jews, mm-hmm. not Jewish prisoners from the concentration camp.
Yeah. And so, it is interesting. I mean, there's kind of, even though the facts are known and Yad Vashem is among those who document it, the planting a story or smearing somebody, it kind of confuses yes, people yes. who are trying to understand what happened. Now, he had credentials as a Red Cross person who had done this work.
He was director of the Swedish Red Cross.
Yeah, and he risked his life, by the way. I noticed when I've looked into him a bit in it, that really wasn't safe to be going at that. The Allied bombers and others were not worrying themselves too much about who was on those highways. They were, they were busy with what they had to do. So he got a reputation for physical courage and for moral courage, et cetera. And based on those credentials, he was asked to take on this job in 1948, right?
That's correct. Now, I should mention that Trygve Lie, who was the first Secretary General of the UN, was a Norwegian politician who had actually helped Bernadotte when he was the head of the Swedish Red Cross. Trygve Lie had helped Bernadotte to arrange this white bus rescue mission, and so he knew Bernadotte personally and had worked with him, and he's the one who nominated Bernadotte for this job of mediator, to go into Palestine and try to arrange a peace.
Mm-hmm. Now, could you talk? Let's talk about the circumstances under which he undertook this job. And the State of Israel was declared on the 14th of April, I believe. May, 1948. There was. There had already been clashes, of course, beginning, I guess, in 47. And he's being asked to step into that situation. The story, at the military background of this is what? Who was fighting who when he arrived there, or who had been fighting each other?
Well, the United Nations in November of 1947 had voted to partition Palestine, divided into two parts. In this, actually, November 29th, 1947, and voted to give the Jews. It was not yet a state of Israel, but they voted to give the Jews 55% of the land, even though they were only a third of the population, and the rest of it, the other 45%, would go to Arabs. Mm-hmm. It was a little more complicated to how that would be divided, but it was going to Arabs. Well, the Arab countries involved, in both in Palestine and in the surrounding countries, understandably felt that this was their land was being taken away and given away.
Mm-hmm.
And so that 2 days after the partition was voted, the Arab, the high command, the Arab high command declared a 3-day strike, general strike in the area. And as you can imagine, this led to clashes and fights between Palestinians and Jews throughout the area. And that was the beginning of the war. Now, I should say that the Jews used this to attack as much as possible. They had already begun, and they continued to try to drive Palestinians out of their villages and out of Palestine.
Mm-hmm.
And when the six Arab armies declared that they were going to fight, or declared war on the Jews, it was largely a defensive measure, and they were largely fighting in the areas that, in the 45% of the country that had been given to or left with the Arabs.
Mm-hmm.
And so it should be clear that they didn't go into the 55% of Palestine that had been given to Israel, much as they didn't like that fact.
Mm-hmm.
The truth is that the Israelis, although they accepted the partition because it was sort of recognition by the United Nations that they had a right to be there,
mm-hmm.
they didn't really like it. They wanted the whole thing.
Well, I noticed, by the way, your article points out that Menachem Begin, who went on to become prime minister, is certainly one of the names that most people in the world know as an Israeli leader. He said, "We want all of the land, and we want it forever." And
right.
He said that in November 1947.
Correct.
So basically, the Palestinians, who are wherever they might be, or they would understand that he intends to come for them, no matter what part of it some UN might say is theirs.
Exactly.
He's not agreeing that it's theirs, and he's
right.
leading a rather important armed group.
Right, and he was the head of the at that point of the Irgun, which is, there were sort of two, I call them Israeli terrorist groups, but they were underground military groups that were basically attacking, making armed attacks on the British and on whom they didn't like at that point. They wanted to get them out. And then on Palestinians throughout the area, they had been doing that since the 30s, and mm-hmm. when the Stern Gang was set up in 1980, they had two groups instead of just one. They both were doing that, and yes, Begin said that it wasn't just that the partition, he wasn't satisfied with the 55%, but he said the partition is illegal and will never be recognized. And also Jerusalem especially would forever be our capital, and all the land would be Israeli.
So he's basically
all of it and forever.
Yeah. So he's basically defying this rather new phenomenon, the United Nations created by the victors in World War II, who had set up what they hoped was a system to be able to sort out issues of this type. Right.
Yeah. And I think it's important to understand the Israelis, and I'll come back to this later, but I don't mean to attack simply the Israelis, because they couldn't do any of what they're doing if they weren't supported by the United States government in Washington. But mm-hmm. in any case, the Israelis have never been satisfied with the support they've gotten when the British, and after the Balfour Declaration in 1917, you can go that far back, but they sort of recognized the idea of having a Jewish homeland in Palestine,
mm-hmm.
and actually helped the Jews to get settled and lay the groundwork for the State of Israel, and put down the Arab Rebellion in the 1930s with armed troops went in and suppressed the Arab Rebellion.
Mm-hmm.
So they were really providing a great deal of help for the Jews in Palestine. But when Israel was set up, and before that, the Israelis decided that they weren't getting enough from the British, so they were going to drive them out. And
yeah.
I think. Yeah.
Well, reading your article, that is one of the most striking things is the, it's close to a pathological dislike. And not that hasn't been experienced by peoples around the world towards the British. It is a great colonial power.
Right.
And it has a lot of people who are still have long memories, et cetera. But the.
Especially since they just cut back their welfare spending. So.
Yeah.
That's another.
Yeah. Now speaking of
the British element.
Yeah, and then, but coming to the crime itself, the Bernadotte is named to be a mediator. Most people don't think of a mediator as your absolute enemy. A mediator is somebody he doesn't belong to either side. It's true. All sides are always suspicious of mediators, but they don't think that they're the boss. So,
no, and in fact, the evidence is that when he first went to Palestine, that he was more sympathetic to the Jews than to the Palestinians. There's example of that is discussed in the book, The Gun and the Olive Branch, which you can read. But in any case, his initial outlook wasn't hostile towards the Israelis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so he comes as the mediator, and yet. That he is targeted, and people scratch their heads, why would you kill a mediator? They did say why. They did issue a statement, and it was people, I guess, identified themselves not by the word Stern Gang, but the Israeli freedom fighters or whatever. And they said he's a British agent, and that's why he had to be killed. Am I right?
Well, yeah, and they also said that... I'm just trying to think of the exact quote, but when there was an article in the New York Times the day after the assassination, in which Sulzberger, who's the C.L. Sulzberger, the family that owned the Times, was actually writing from Paris, but he had been in Palestine, and he talked to people from the Stern Gang. Then he said, I asked why they wanted to assassinate Count Bernadotte or any other United Nations representative. And they replied that their organization was determined to seize all of Jerusalem for the State of Israel and would have no interference by any national or international body.
Hmm.
So it was very clear that their idea of, you know, the way to get what you want is to kill.
Yeah. Yeah, now that raises the, of course, and leads us to the second problem of the fact that no one was arrested or punished. But he's mediating, and he's talking to Israeli leaders, in this case, I guess, either Mr. Ben-Gurion or his representatives. And they're the ones who are engaging him in, one assumes, good faith. But when he gets killed, one suspects maybe it wasn't in good faith because nothing happens.
That's right. And they have to say that I think it's important to recognize that what they were doing at the time, even before he got there, you know, was fighting to get rid of, to drive the Palestinians out of the area, to take over more of Palestine. And that his whatever proposals he and Ralph Bunche, his partner in this, what the Israelis would call crime, whatever proposals they made, just almost any proposal to for peace and settle, some kind of settlement to divide the area, the Israelis would have rejected because they just were determined to take over as much as they could
indeed.
By force.
Well, by the way, had the murder not happened, they weren't going to make a deal anyway, right?
I mean, no, absolutely.
So the murder just becomes kind of an exclamation point. It becomes a kind of maybe a Rorschach or whatever. It just sort of reveals that you don't have a solvable problem, at least with the partners that were discussing it.
I think that's an important point, because some people say, well, if they hadn't killed Bernadotte, there'd be a different situation in Israel. And I really, horrible as it was, if they would just go out and assassinate this mediator, put it like that, I think they were already driving people, you know, killing people and driving people out. I think the last time I mentioned the village of Sasa, I gave a quote from the New York Times on how they had blown up house by house and killed people in that village. But there were many others as well. Some have been written up quite a bit. And in July of 1948, again, before Bernadotte got there, they had destroyed the village of Lydda, Lydda.
Mm-hmm.
And you can look that up as well. And
some of the most best-known leaders were involved in these things, including actually Mr. Rabin was involved in one of them. I read an account of he said that they asked him, "Well, why did you do that? Did you ask Ben Gurion?" And they said, "Yeah, we asked him," and he just waved his hand. What are we going to do with these? What are we going to do with these villagers? And he just waved his hand. So they understood that to be an order.
And there are a number of books that have quoted the diaries of many of these leaders, including Ben-Gurion's diary and Sharet's diary and others, in which they describe in detail decisions that were made to drive out the Palestinians and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's important to understand that this is not a group. The Israelis were not about to settle as long as they could get there, as long as they could get enough guns and kill enough people and just take it over. And if you were in their way, they'll roll over you.
Mm-hmm.
And unless you were able to resist.
This is Fred Jerome, by the way. He's the author, editor. Author and editor. Einstein on Israel and Zionism. It contains, of course. And this is Phil Taylor back. We have a few minutes more we're going to be doing on our subsequent shows from the interview with Fred Jerome. And just to again remind you, that was, in my opinion, a very important account. I do hope people will go to the essay written by Fred Jerome on this sort of singular moment, the assassination of Bernadotte, Count Bernadotte. He, by the way, didn't like to be called Count, which good for him. But one gets tired of lords and counts and dukes. But at any rate, it is an important story if we're going to understand contemporary issues apropos of Palestine, to know those initial moments of the coming into being of the State of Israel and the matter of refugees. And it does bring us to the most recent events, I think it's very important to revisit them. Again, it is the Taylor Report. You can write to us, taylor@ciut.fm, and I'll just remind you that Eve Engler will be coming to Toronto on the 20th of September. He'll be in Hamilton on the 19th. Of course, we're in the age of the Internet, so you just put in the name Eve Engler, and you'll find out all about everything, probably more about Eve than you care to know. But he has written a brilliant book, and he's written some previous that have gotten a lot of attention, and I guarantee you this. I have worked in Africa myself for a period of 10, 15 years, going in and out of various countries there, talking to people at practically every segment of society, you could say. And when I read this book, I still am amazed at all the things that Eve has found out and has to tell us. So, for the Taylor Report, I'm Phil Taylor, and I want to thank Lucas, and we'll see you next week with Phil Condon telling us what happened when he was in the upper decks of the Blue Jay ball game. We'll see you.